This is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction Show. Welcome to LOA Today. Walt, Eli, and Mark here with you this Thursday, May 28, 2015. And we are starting a new sequence of shows here on LOA Today. We're going to be talking about some specific research that ties into what Yoan has been doing as she's been pursuing her PhD. But specifically, she has culled some very interesting studies that also have a relationship to the law of attraction. And we're going to try to do one, maybe two studies a show for a while. This, is, by the way, is going to be an introduction, if you will, because we are planning, drum roll please, we are planning to do a book. We're going to write a book as a team, and this book is going to be all about the scientific side of the law of attraction and how it actually applies in the lives of real everyday people. So it's pretty exciting.
Yes, we've set the intention, sent it out into the universe, and now all we have to do is attract it to us or attract us to it.
Well, now we've put it out more than just into the universe. We put it onto the internet, which is even more serious.
Oh, right, that's true.
Yep. So, Yoana, you've been hand-selecting which ones we're going to talk about first, which studies we're going to look at first. And why don't you tell us about the first one that you picked?
Yes, so the first one I chose is entitled Antidepressant Effects of Exercise, Evidence for an Adult Neurogenesis Hypothesis.
That certainly sounds scientific.
Yes.
So tell us about the study. What happened with this particular study?
Yeah, these group of scientists, and I was trying to see where they're located, but I couldn't figure out which institution. But they wanted to look at the effect of exercise on people suffering from depression and compare those effects with the effects of the antidepressant drugs that people are sometimes prescribed when they are depressed, especially if they have what the medical term calls MDD, a major depressive disorder.
That sounds frightening.
Yes. and you know, there was a time when those were rare and happened, you know, for some really tragic, traumatic event in a person's life. But unfortunately, these disorders are becoming more frequent in our society for one reason or another. And so there have been a lot of studies trying to understand what happens to a patient who undergoes those, who, you know, is diagnosed with that kind of a disorder, and how best to treat the disorder.
Now, you mentioned that they were putting exercise head-to-head with antidepressant drugs. Any particular drugs? Are there name drugs involved in this study, or did they not specify?
They gave the generic name, which is the is known in medicine as the SRI, or serotonin reuptake inhibitors. And so those are the more popular classes of antidepressants, and there are a few brand names for that. They didn't really name those. They just say the serotonin reuptake inhibitors.
Okay. All right. Well, then we'll stick to the generic name.
Yeah, so we don't want to be sued.
So who won?
Well, it was a tie.
It was a tie.
Well, in a sense that exercise was shown to be just as effective as the drug. The advantage that exercise had over the drug was that the effect of exercise was longer lasting. Mm. So if you stopped exercising, and those who stopped taking the drug, the effect that the benefits they experienced from exercising lasted anywhere from a year to 2 years. Whereas with the drug, when they stopped, it ended within.
Oh, right. Yes. So does this mean that the type of exercise being studied was people who do intensive calisthenics, and they're working out 2 or 3 hours a day, and they're really living a full athletic lifestyle. Is that right?
Well, as good scientists, they had all different types of groups. They had those with the control who didn't exercise at all. And then they had those who did, you know, low intensity exercise, and those who did moderate exercise, and those who did intense aerobic exercise. And again, there was a winner, of course. Intense aerobic exercise had the greater effect. They all had benefits, but intense aerobic exercise on a regular basis showed a greater effect.
Okay. I suspect most people don't really want to do the intense routine. So what happens if you just do a low level of exercise compared to, say, being on the drug?
Well, certainly there's benefits to any exercise. You do see the effect. But in terms of how quickly and the relative size of the effect, of course, the more intensely you exercise, there's greater benefit for it. So one of the things that they were looking at is neurogenesis, which is the growth or the birth of new cells, particularly in some very specific areas of the brain, one of which is the hippocampus. And what they saw was that, you know, people who did intense exercise had 2 times the growth of those who did the low intensity type exercise.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And how did this compare to the people who were just drugging out?
Right. So there was no growth. And what they found, you know, what started this whole interest was when they were, you know, with the new tools that medicine have now for imaging the body and the brain, what started showing up regularly was that people who had a major episode of depression, there were certain areas of their brain that were different from people who didn't have depression, and one of which was the hippocampus, and that's the structure in the brain that is responsible for memory and learning. People who have depression have a smaller, almost atrophied hippocampus or hippocampi, because you have 2 on either side of your brain. So that was one of... Yeah.
Go ahead, finish.
Yeah, so that was one of the things that started them down the path of trying to understand what happens to in the brain of someone depressed. And so what they saw was that these two structures were almost always smaller in the people who had depression. That led to further studies now where they started trying to understand how does the antidepressants work. And so what they did was they started doing brain imaging scan of people with who were depressed and who were taking the antidepressant. And after a month or so, they would notice that there were changes in the size of the hippocampus and in other areas of the brain, but mainly in the hippocampus. And so those imaging studies combined with epidemiological studies where people reported improvement and almost alleviation of their depression when they were exercising regularly. So then they started to think maybe there's something similar that's happening with the antidepressant and exercise. And sure enough, when they did the study of the brain, of course they started first with the small mammals, mm-hmm. you know, and having these rats and rodents in different environments and on different regimen, and then studying, you know, after they were sacrificed.
Oh no!
Looking at the size and the health of certain areas of the brain, and that's when they realized that exercise was having the same effect as some of the drugs. And now they can do some of those imaging studies, of course, on live patients, because you can do the MRIs and all these other things to see the brain. And so that's what has led to the study of all these different effects of the exercise, and then that led further to understanding exactly what causes this neurodegeneration. And they found that certain hormones and certain components of the blood are upregulated when you're exercising.
So why is it important that the hippocampus experiences these kinds of growth? Why is that important for bodily health?
Right. So the hippocampus is, you know, its main function is memory and learning, but it's also involved in regulation of mood and basically disposition. And when you are stressed, you produce these adrenal substances, for want of a better word, one of which is cortisol. And cortisol, chronic persistence of cortisol in the bloodstream, among one of its effects is that it actually attacks the hippocampus.
It attacks it?
Yes, it causes degeneration of the hippocampus, basically, by, you know, a number of reasons. One of the things that they also notice in a lot of people with depression is that they have reduced blood flow to certain areas of the brain, and one of those is the hippocampus. So the blood vessels start dying in those areas, but also the cells themselves undergo degeneration and death as a result of the cortisol and other glucocorticoids in the blood.
Well, that can't be good.
No.
I mean, I'm not a research scientist, but that sounds really, really bad.
Yeah, that is actually terrible. I think Mark wants to say something. Okay.
All right. So we've touched on the general picture of this study. Mm-hmm. I'm still not really clear on one point, though. Mm-hmm. I know the average person doesn't want to do a lot of exercise. So I'm wondering, how does the person who does a low level of exercise on a regular basis compare to somebody who's taking the drugs?
Yeah, so what we, you know, the thing is that this study is looking at, you know, people who have experienced severe depression. And so they need acute treatment. But for those of us who are interested in more of a maintenance type effect, certainly, you know, moderate to low intensity exercise, you know, regularly for months and years will have the benefit of not just staving off the death of your hippocampus, but, you know, just protecting it, keeping it healthy, because exercise, like I said, of course, for one, it increases blood flow. So that's the first thing. You need blood flow to any part of your body to make sure that it's alive and thriving and working properly. But also exercise causes your body to produce the neurochemicals that are important to the growth and the sustenance of certain areas of your brain. So exercise, of course, we know causes an increase in endorphins, and also the serotonin levels go up. But the most important factor that's increased in your blood when you exercise is what is known as the BDNF, or the brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And this is like a fertilizer to neurons. It helps neurons grow and develop and remain healthy and function well. And so, you know, it depends on what you're doing. If you are relatively healthy and you just want to stay that way, certainly normal, everyday, low-intensity exercise is enough. But if you've suffered a major depressive episode and you potentially may be prescribed some antidepressant, then you might want to consider some other.
So if you're a major depressive and you don't want to use drugs, about the only thing you can do is do an intensive athletic regime where you're exercising, you know, 5 hours a day or something like that.
No. When you completely misinterpret the term intense exercise.
Okay.
Intense does not have to do with the duration, but more in terms of the intensity.
Oh, okay, so sprinting instead of just jogging, for example.
Well, even jogging might be moderate compared to walking, you see? Mm-hmm. So walking is considered low intensity. Jogging may be moderate, and running at a like 6 miles per hour, that would be considered a more intense. But, you know, sprinting definitely would be help in terms of getting the brain to really, and the body to really get involved into producing some of those chemicals that you need. So yeah, the intense is not 5 hours a day. No, not at all.
Okay, I guess I was just trying to figure out if somebody was suffering from depression and they didn't want to use the drugs, could they use some form of exercise instead of the drugs? And the answer, I guess, is ambivalent.
No.
No, it's not ambivalent. Okay, so how much exercise would they have to do? Would they have to be doing intense exercise to recover if they're in a severely depressed situation?
Yes, they would have to do intense exercise, but that means something like running for an hour, you know, 45 minutes to an hour at a fairly moderate pace, you know, 3-4 times a week, or swimming, or riding your bike,
You know,
something along those lines.
So it's intense, but it's not overwhelming. It's something that
Exactly.
even if you have a full lifestyle, you could still use it to replace the drugs as a way of helping to pull yourself out of that depressive state.
Yes, definitely so. And, okay. And you know, the irony is that because if you do 5-hour exercise, you're actually doing more damage than good. So you don't want to do that because then your body goes into stress and you produce the cortisol that you're trying not to produce anyway.
Well, that's not fair. It actually makes sense. I mean, because we've all heard stories about people who, you know, they had problems going on, and they basically tried to outrun them by going out and exercising every day, you know, taking a run or whatever. And many of them beat it. Many of them were able to overcome it. So it does make sense, at least from an intuitive aspect.
Yeah,
but to also hear that there's a scientific basis for it is reassuring.
Yeah, it is. Actually, it makes you want to go out and exercise right now.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, you know, not just in terms of the depression specifically, but when you talk about the hippocampus, it's involved in memory and learning. So, you know, the what do you call those? The senior moments, if you want to stave off the senior moments.
Okay.
<It's a bad> one. Yeah, you want to be exercising, and if you want to keep your brain alive and alert and you know, to learn new things, definitely you need to be exercising.
So we should be running 2 miles before we do this program just to make sure we don't have senior moments on the air.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that led to this discovery was when they were working with the rats in the lab, they noticed that there were three things that would affect the size of the hippocampus, and one of which was the environment that the rats lived in. If they lived in, you know, a relatively small, confined environment with nothing much for them to do and get involved in, they had, they didn't have as much regeneration or neurogenesis as the rats who had, you know, the cage with the wheels and the tunnels and the ball and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, lots of an enriched environment, basically. They also found that the rats who had to learn new tasks, you know, like those who had to do the maze, you know, to try and find their food and that kind of stuff, that helped. But the greatest difference was those, the rats that were exercising on a regular basis, meaning every day or every other day kind of thing.
And I get the sense just from listening to your description here that this is not so much a single study as it is an umbrella of studies, because it sounds like they did study after study after study depending on what results they got and how they interpreted the result and decided, well, then that means we have to follow up and do this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, there was quite a bit of study, you know, but the different experiments that these group of scientists did. And I think it was kind of divided, like, you know, one group did one and one the other. There were like 10 or so scientists involved in this one paper. And they were probably coming from 3 or 4 different locations, different universities. Mm-hmm. So each group was responsible for a certain area of the research.
Right, right, right.
And so they did different things and shared their learnings and then compiled it into this one paper.
Okay, that's good. So most of us, fortunately, are not battling major depression. There may be some listeners who have been dealing with that, and so perhaps they now have some insight as to why it is that they need to get out every day and or at least every other day and do some exercise to help them climb out so they don't have to rely on drugs to do it. But what about for the rest of us who have maybe varying degrees of depression or, elation or, mood swings or whatever it might be. Or even for those of us who are perhaps staying relatively in the positive because they've been listening to LOA Today all this time. what does this study tell us for that audience?
Well, first, I must make a disclaimer because, one who's involved in medical research, you always have to say to listeners, please do not, stop taking their medication without the doctor's supervision.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But for those of us who, we may not be dealing with a major depressive episode, certainly we can all benefit from more exercise. Like I said, it increases blood flow to the brain. And that's like a major thing, because as your brain and body ages, there's death to the smaller blood vessels, mainly the capillaries that supply the blood to these organs, very delicate organs. And once the blood supply is, interrupted, then it's not long before the cells start dying. And when the cells die, the organs die. So it increases blood flow, because the researchers found that exercise increases VEGF, which is the vascular endothelial growth factor. And what that means is basically the factor in the blood that is responsible for growth of blood vessels. And so that's one of the benefits you experience. Of course, you also have the increase in the serotonin and the endorphins and all the other stuff that help us feel good. One of the things that it does to help to regulate an important stress pathway in our body. There's the pathway that's called the HPA axis, or the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis. And when you experience chronic stress, that pathway can become compromised and stuck in the mode of overproducing cortisol all the time for, very minor reasons. And exercise helps to rebalance that, so that the body then becomes sensitive to the cortisol again, but also learns how to flush the system of the cortisol once whatever the stressful episode is over. So you're working on a project, or you're taking an exam, your cortisol level rises significantly. But when you exercise helps to flush the cortisol out of your system, so that it doesn't stay around and cause all that damage. Because when it stays around, that's when you start, accumulating it. Then the body becomes desensitized to it, so more is produced, and it just starts a very bad cycle. So exercise certainly helps with that. But for me, the best benefit of exercise is the BDNF, because who doesn't want growth factors in their brain to help their neurons grow and survive and differentiate and proliferate? For a long time, people thought that there was no growth happening in the brain after a certain age. They thought at two, there was, your brain stopped growing and developing. But they learned that's not true. We have growth of neurons. In fact, they've discovered specific stem cells that are specific to the brain. They're called, I wrote it down here, NCS, neural stem cells. I forgot that. just like you have stem cells in your bone marrow that then differentiates into all the cells in your body, you have stem cells in your brain that differentiates to all the different types of cells in your body, in your brain. And so they found that all adults have these cells. And the BDNF helps these cells to then develop and to differentiate into the different types of cells that your brain needs. So it keeps your brain always alive and growing.
Regenerating.
And regenerating, yes.
There's quite a lot of activity going on there. You mentioned earlier blood vessels growing, and that may be somewhat news to some people. I mean, when we hear about blood vessels, we hear about cholesterol forming plaque and things like that. We never really hear about blood vessels actually growing or getting healthier or more cellular or whatever. What does it mean to say that a blood vessel grows?
So, you know, it's growth that happens with every cell in your body. You know, the cells in your body they're always growing and developing, and, you know, they last a certain amount of time. In fact, I think it said that every 4 months or so, all your cells change, you know. But besides the blood vessels can die or they can grow. You know, just like if you you got a cut on your skin, and the healing process involves growth of, you know, the skin tissue, the fibrin that supports all that, and as well the blood vessels, because you cut, you know, when you bleed, because the blood vessels been cut. But part of the healing process is the reconnecting of that blood vessel and the repairing of that blood vessel. And the you know, the blood flows to that place again. And a lot of times people who have certain diseases like diabetic neuropathy, and you see the blackening that happens on their skin, that's a result of the death of the blood vessel, which then leads to the death of the nerve tissue and other tissue, and that's what gives that blackening color. But depending on how far that's progressed, you can regrow the blood vessels and reinstate blood circulation to that area so that you can regrow the cells and regrow the tissue and regrow the neurons. That's what the healing process is all about. And there are certain factors that are important to that. And one of them is the VEGF that I talked about. And so if you don't have that, you can't grow the blood vessels. And exercise helps you to produce more of that.
So what we're really talking about here when we talk about regeneration of blood vessels and indeed of neurons and other cellular matter in the brain and throughout the body, we're talking about the body's ability to heal itself despite the fact that you've had stressors or injuries or traumas that by most measures would be debilitating and would actually be a tremendous setback and shorten your life and reduce the quality of your life. We're talking about being able to reverse all of that.
Exactly. And, you know, once you're alive and breathing, you know, you have what it takes to heal and regenerate your tissues. You know, in New Age movement, they talk about the life force, the life-giving energy, or, you know, whatever. Some people call it God, some people call it Source, some people call it life energy. You know, we all have that, and that entity is able to heal every part of our body if we tap into it.
So people can find God in exercise.
Yes.
Well, there are worse things to do with your time, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exercise could be your worship session. I mean, it could be your meditation, as it were. And it definitely can be a means of accessing, tapping into Source power.
Well, it's time to take a break. Let's take that break. Then afterward, let's explore some of the ramifications of this study and what we've beyond what we've been able to describe here, all the various ways that it has the capability to inspire us to improve our lives. Does that sound good to you guys?
Yep.
Sounds good to me, too. This is LOA Today here on PRN. We will be back after these messages.
Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof.
Welcome back to LOA Today. Walt, Ioana, and Mark on this Thursday, May 28th, 2015, talking about the role of exercise in having an antidepressant effect, and in fact referring to a study where people who were on antidepressant drugs were compared to people doing exercise, and it turns out exercise was just as effective, which is a pretty exciting thing. Now, we talked before the break about many of the physical ramifications of this, how the body is able to regenerate itself and heal itself despite all the damage that can get caused by depression and mood-related problems. But hopefully there's also a greater benefit also for people who are in a more positive zone, perhaps pursuing the concepts we describe here of the law of attraction. I know I'm one of those people. I'd like to learn more about how does that apply to what I try to do. So, Yuona, what does this have for those of us who want to learn more about applying the law of attraction?
Well, we've talked on this show various times about different ways we can raise our energy and raise our vibration, and certainly exercise is one of those ways that we can do that, because one of the things that the research shows that it's not just that exercise alleviates depression, but it actually improves mood and outlook. So the people who were previously depressed and started exercising, you know, they didn't just get rid of their symptoms of depression, but they also went beyond that and started having a more positive outlook on their lives. And that in turn improved their health in other areas. And so, you know, LOA, we talk about, you know, improving our energies, improving our mood and our attitude, our disposition, because doing so is what's going to attract all the good things in our lives. And we said that exercise is one of those ways, but now we have, you know, proof, scientific proof that it actually does help to raise your energy by exercising. One of the things that we, Mark and I, learned this week, you know, some of the teachers in LOA talk about the body being the subconscious mind.
The body is subconscious mind. Okay.
Yes, the body is the subconscious mind, because it is in the body where all of the programming and the patterns of our, you know, environment and how we were raised is stored. It's stored specifically in our cells. So we have these, you know, when we think certain thoughts, we produce certain chemicals. And those chemicals are then, you know, they get attached to receptors on the cell, and they go into the cell and they have a certain reaction, you know, whatever it is, the cell does. And how it does it depends on the environment, and that's affected by our thoughts. And our thoughts are determined by the neurons, the patterns of our neurons. And so one of the ways to reprogram your brain, of course, is to establish new neuronal patterns. And that, in turn, produces a different set of chemicals, which have a different set of effects on the cells of your body. And so exercise is one of the ways that you can directly affect that, sort of interrupt that program, interrupt the flow of the chemicals to which you are addicted, and help the body produce new and different chemicals, and also help to break those addictions and break those cycles, so that you can then start having a new and different experience in your life.
And just from my own experience with, you know how I like to do daily walks, but it could be almost any kind of exercise. It doesn't really matter. I know that all it takes is one walk for me to feel better.
Yeah.
And that has always been true. I may not feel better for a real long period of time, but I've always felt better, no matter what, how badly I felt, no matter how depressed I felt. Taking a walk made me feel better. It may not have made me feel great, may not have made me feel wonderful, but on the scale of really bad to really good, I always moved up the scale.
Yes. And you know, on a physiological level, the feeling bad that you're feeling is because you have certain thoughts that are producing certain chemicals that are having certain effects on the cells and organs of your body, and those are interpreted as the bad feelings, the depressed feelings. Exercise increases blood flow, causes either the removal of the toxic chemicals and possibly an infusion of fresh new set of less toxic chemicals, hopefully. And that's responsible for the change in your mood, the change in your feeling. So that's what's happening on the level of your cell.
What role does what role is played by the happy hormones when you're exercising? I mean, to what extent are they really kicking in, or is the whole perceived adrenaline effect more overemphasized by runners and walkers and exercises than it really is.
No, that's been proven by countless different scientific experiments that exercise certainly improves, increases the levels of serotonin and endorphins in the blood. I mean, that is undisputed. And so certainly when you're exercising and you're producing those chemicals, you're increasing the concentration of those chemicals in the blood, they're going to knock off the cortisol and the toxic and the stress chemicals from the receptors of your cells. They're going to be replaced. And of course, then the cells will start going to do and behave differently. And that's going to be interpreted by the body as a new, different, better feeling.
So when Rocky was running up the steps in Philadelphia after having been running and exercising for weeks on end and was able to just charge up the steps at the end and jump around like he just won a prize fight, it wasn't just because he was happy that he ran faster. It's because the exercise was actually producing a happy effect inside him.
Yes, and yeah, that's the thing. And you know, those endorphins are not just for feeling happy. They have they're pain relievers. They're natural pain relievers that the body produces. So, you know, when these guys are exercising at that level of intensity, they actually almost don't feel the pain.
Which so can be a little bit scary when you think about it, but because as you pointed out, they can also be building up stress at the same time.
Yes, it depends on how long you're doing it for. You know, the body is well built for a certain level of stress under acute conditions. It's mm-hmm. when the conditions become chronic that's when the problems arise. Because under acute conditions, when the body recovers, it actually is better for having undergone that acute stress. So acute stress is a good thing.
Aren't you also saying, though, it's not just a runner's high that goes away when you stop exercising, but with enough regimen, enough high intensity exercise especially, you're making permanent changes to your physiology?
Yes.
To be a more, literally be a happier, more positive person emotionally?
Yes, definitely, right. Because when you are depressed, or maybe not even depressed, just a little bit blah or stressed out for a long time, there are, you know, the chemicals that are produced in your body, the cells start you know, producing the receptors that allow them to take in those chemicals. And, you know, the cells in your body are very adaptive. So if they see that this chemical is the chemical that's going to be around for some time, then they're going to say, okay, well, we don't need the other receptors. We'll just, you know, maximize these receptors because this is what we are going to be getting. And we're going to make the most of it. And the cells then become addicted to those toxic chemicals to an extent, such that when you stop producing it, the cells start going through withdrawal symptoms. And that's usually when you start feeling uncomfortable and, you know, you want to revert back to your depressed state or whatever state that the body's used to. But if you persist in flooding the body with the positive chemicals, again, like we said, the cells are adaptive. And then, they'll, you know, after they start realizing, okay, oh, something's different here. I'm not sure I'm on board with this, but it seems like it's going to persist. And so they will change the receptors on your cells such that they're ready for the happy chemicals. And so you have actually then changed your default mood. And as those who believe the body is the subconscious mind, you've just reprogrammed your subconscious mind.
What about somebody who's in bad athletic shape? You know, they haven't exercised in years, and maybe they're overweight. Maybe they're so overweight or so out of shape that, you know, walking a quarter mile, that's enough. They're done in. They can't do any more than that. Is there any hope for them where this research is concerned?
Yes. You know, that's the beauty of the human body, because what's intense for me may not be intense for you, because what's intense for me certainly won't be intense for a conditioned professional athlete. It's about taking your body to that place where it experiences that level of intensity. So, and that's the other thing that you know, is involved here. You, it, 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 it's it's almost an individual kind of thing. So you have you can know when you are exercising intensely. And one of the ways that they do that is what, you know, your heart rate goes up and your breathing rate increases. And so what will take for your heart rate to go up will not cause my heart rate to go up, or vice versa. So that those are the measures that you do. So someone who's overweight and, you know, hasn't exercised for a while, and if all they can do is walk a quarter mile, then that's what they need to do. The body is going to respond to that. You know, Mark and I, we just watched a video of a guy who was over 600 pounds. And, you know, at one point, all he could do was this hand machine thing. It was like a bicycle pedal for the hand. That's all he could do. And then eventually he could, you know, incorporate some weights into that. And it took him a long time before he could even get up out of the chair and down again. And so for him, that hand exercise thing was all he could do. But that was intense enough. It did have an effect. So.
And did I have to ask, did he end up losing any of the weight?
Yes. In fact, he lost over 400 pounds.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
I presume not all at once, I would hope.
No.
That was about a year and a half.
Yeah, like, I think 2 years. Or 2 years. Like that. Yeah, but he was persistent, and, you know, as his body improved, he kept going for more and more, and until, yeah, he did it. He did it all with exercise.
I mean, even losing 400 pounds over the course of 2 years, that's intense.
It is intense, exactly.
Oh, yeah, they showed lots of clips of him over the as the months went by, and he was working hard.
Yeah.
Well, I can imagine that once he saw the weight starting to come off, it probably really motivated him. You know, it's one of those things that creates its own motivation and its own cycle of continuation. So that probably helped. But getting started is the hard part, and the whole thing about the hand exercise to get him started, that sounded like that was the key, just finding a way that he could actually do it on a daily basis.
Yeah.
For him, getting started came from his doctor, who told him that he would be dead at 35 if he didn't do something.
Yeah, wow. He hit bottom. He bottomed out because he's depressed and drinking and just not wanting to live. And that's when he decided he wanted to do things differently. And fortunately for him, he had a friend who
coached him all the way.
Yeah, this guy into exercise, and he really kind of helped him all the way. Very dedicated.
Yeah, it sometimes does help to have somebody to push you along. It does raise another question, though. You kind of touched on it indirectly, but there's the old adage, no pain, no gain. Does this mean you have to actually experience pain in order to have gain?
Well, you know, there are people who believe that there's a Native American saying that's been adopted by the Marines that said pain is weakness leaving the body. But no, you don't have to have pain. Certainly you do not. But you have to, you have to get your heart rate up. Yeah. That's one of the keys.
Discomfort, at least.
Yes.
Definite discomfort.
You have to get your heart rate up. Your breathing has to increase in order to actually... You know, the body responds to that by making certain positive changes. And so, doing that on a regular basis, you know, you know, for me, I exercise every other day because I'm a strong proponent in recovery. That's extremely important because I think it's in recovery where all the wonderful things happen. You know, when you exercise intensely and you really... stress in a good way, your lungs, you know, your lungs then start needing more oxygen. So it opens up and it takes in more air. And without a certain level of intensity, that's not going to happen. And so you take in more oxygen and you flush out carbon dioxide. You increase the blood flow to all the areas of your body. So there's a certain intensity that's required, but it doesn't have to be painful, certainly.
Well, that's probably a relief, particularly to any listeners who have not been exercising regularly, because at least now, you know, yeah, okay, you have to raise your heart rate up, but that doesn't really hurt. That's just a change in experience, and exactly. You know, there may be a small amount of discomfort, but considering you get the benefit of the happy juices that flow, that yes. pretty much gets covered pretty quickly, I would think.
Yeah.
And as you said, there's also an effect the more that you exercise where there's an anti-pain regimen going on.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I know that happens to me with running. The first marathon that I ran, and this happens frequently to marathoners, I lost my toenail, the nail on my big toe, and I didn't feel a thing.
Wow. I'm not sure what to think of that.
No, I was amazed because, you know, that was pretty painful, but I was, you know, I had been running 20 miles or something, and so by then I had so much endorphins flowing through my system that I did not feel it.
See, for me, marathoning, that just sounds like pain. That that just does not sound like fun at all. 20 miles, heck, I have no more interest in running a mile than 20 miles.
Yeah. 26.2 was us marathoners like to remind
that's
everybody.
That's standard marathon distance, yeah. But I've seen the way those people struggle across that finish line. I don't want to be like that.
No, but I mean, for me, it was the greatest accomplishment. But you do not have to do that. I repeat, nobody's required to run that distance, especially if you've not trained properly. That can be detrimental, almost deadly. So, yeah, you know, and you know, I've since severely cut back on my the length or the distance in my running and focused more on intensity, because you know, now in the field of exercise and health, it's all about high intensity intervals of training and running and exercising, as opposed to long extended periods of time, because like I said, you can cause some negative effects by running for too long, too many hours.
You can actually weaken your heart, can't you?
Yes, exactly.
So what's the optimal exercise time for a higher intensity than what you're normally doing in your everyday life? What's optimal?
I think 30 to 45 minutes is optimal.
Okay.
Anything beyond an hour is like you're really harming yourself.
Well, then I must be doing something right without having planned it, because I reduced my walks from 6 miles to 4 miles a day, and 6 miles normally took me like an hour and a half. 4 miles takes me about an hour, so I'm doing about an hour a day when I do my walk.
Okay.
So yeah. It sounds like I'm in range.
You are. Just make sure you're walking briskly.
Briskly, yes. Well, I usually don't get past. I mean... you know, if there's somebody on rollerblades or on bicycle, obviously they're going to go faster than I am. But other than, you know, runners or somebody on a vehicle, I'm usually the one doing the passing.
Well, considering you're 6'8".
Well, you'd be amazed. There are people who are quite a bit shorter than I am who can walk very quickly.
That's true. My mom is one of those.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So, okay, well, listen, we've got about, I'd say about 5 minutes left in the program here. Let's go to the other end. Let's talk about the role that exercise can play when you're already in a good place. Let's say you're an advanced LOA practitioner and you want to use exercise to just get yourself to that next level. I would presume that it will help you do that. How effective is it, and what can we look for to do to make the thing better for us, to get the most out of the exercise?
You know, considering the society in which we were raised and which we live, where everything seems to be go against what we were trying to do in LOA, there's so much negativity around, and you know, the propensity to get caught up in things and become frustrated and upset and angry. It's almost like automatic. Exercise helps you to you know, to stave that off and to kind of make a good attitude your default. You know, and as we touched on earlier, exercise is one of the ways that we can tap into that healing ability in our bodies to deal with whatever it is. You know, exercise helps improve your immune system. In fact, when they were looking at the people who suffered depression, that was one of the things that they had. They had a compromised immune system, which made them susceptible to all kinds of diseases. Exercise reverses that. And not only does it reverse that, but, you know, this is probably for another show. When we talk about brain state, you know, there's the alpha and the beta and the state of the brain state. And, you know, for meditators, you're always trying to go to that alpha state. Exercise helps you to do that. Exercise helps you to remain calm and to be in control. It also helps you to sleep better. And there are so many benefits to, you know, a good night's sleep.
Oh, so, sure.
Yeah, so definitely. And there's, you know, there are numerous benefits to exercise. In fact, the medical field is coming to realize that a lot of the medications that people are on, I mean, including all the stuff with diabetes and all that other stuff, which, you know, they have countless number of side effects. You know, you see the commercials on TV and the side effects takes longer than the commercials. But, you know, yeah, so they're realizing that exercise can be just as effective without the side effects. So, I mean, there's just nothing bad about exercising.
Other than pressing yourself and stressing yourself by exercising too hard.
Yes, that you definitely want to be, you know, have balance.
Everything in moderation.
In moderation. Yeah.
Along these lines, we had been reading some anecdotal stories of people who claim that they have made such a change in their lives toward more positive emotional feelings and moods every day that they no longer succumb to negative emotions.
Yes.
Ever.
Yeah.
Because of the exercise, you mean?
I don't recall if exercise was a key part of that, but I just recall I was amazed to discover that some people have achieved this in their lives.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know that was really possible.
I think all of those people incorporate exercise as part of their routine. Yeah, it's almost essential, actually.
I think it's interesting that you equated the state of alpha wave behavior to exercise as well as to meditation, because it almost sounds like when we're exercising, we're achieving the same kind of mental state as when we're sitting and meditating.
Right. And so, yeah, if you are, you know, it depends on what kind of exercising you're doing. But I know for me, I've experienced it a number of times when I'm running. And that's usually when I don't have, you know, my headphones and music. And like, if I'm running, you know, running outside, because if I run inside with the TV and all that kind of, but running outside in nature, every time without fail, I get an inspiration, an inspired thought, an idea about some problem. And I don't set out to, you know, I don't even think about it consciously. But all of a sudden, this idea comes up to me, you know, a mile or two into my run. And I realized that running and exercising, certain exercise, you know, actually allows you to access that lower frequency part of your brain that's just definitely more creative and closer to source wisdom.
That actually does make sense, because I know that for myself, as I have pursued my walking program over the years, there are times where my brain goes off on, you know, the brain has basically gone out of control and is charging down all the negative paths and exploring all the stuff it really shouldn't be exploring because I'm out and enjoying a nice walk. Mm-hmm. And then there are other times where I'm more in that alpha type state where, you know, I'm just living in the now and enjoying the nature and nothing really going through my mind other than here I am out feeling it feels good and all that kind of stuff. So I've experienced both sides of it. And as I have exercised more and more, I find myself more in the second kind of state than in the first kind of state. I still find myself at times, you know, wandering through that maze of all the negatives going on in life, but a lot less often. And I'm wondering if the exercise is perhaps driving that.
Yeah, I think so. In fact, you know, there are Buddhist monks who incorporate a lot of physical activity in their meditation. You know, in the Western world, we have this idea of meditation of just sitting and doing nothing. But, you know, some of the the monks, the Buddhist monks up in the mountain, their meditation is pretty active.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So that reinforces the idea that exercise can play a role in meditation.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, we're out of time, but this has been very informative, and I'm glad that we've started to do this series because, for one thing, it's going to help me as I do my part of our writing project, but also hopefully it's helpful to our audience because there is substantial scientific literature showing the various aspects of how positive thinking, positive activity, in this case exercise, and a variety of other positive type things can have a physiological basis in getting us into a better place.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we're going to look forward to, can you give us a taste? What are we going to be talking about next week?
I have no idea.
You haven't figured that part out. Okay. Well, when you let us know, then we'll know. And Hopefully it'll be before we type the next show. That'd be a good thing.
Right.
Mark and Yona, thank you so much for doing this with me today. As usual, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, same here.
Yep, indeed.
And we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say.